Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome with the LEAD Network webinar, Building the New Normal, organized by our Netherlands chapter in close cooperation with the Neuro Leadership Institute. We're just allowing ourselves a minute to let all participants to join us, so stay with us. Thank you for joining LEAD Network webinar. We're about to start. We're just waiting for people to join us, so stay with us. Welcome everyone to the LEAD Network webinar organized by the Netherlands chapter in cooperation with the Neuro Leadership Institute. Just stay with us. We're waiting for people to join and we're about to start. I'm handing over to Anna Gruet, our moderator of today. Thank you for joining.
Thank you, Marga. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the LEAD Network Netherlands chapter webinar about building the new normal. And thank you all so much for joining us this afternoon. My name is Anna Gruet, and I am currently working as a talent acquisition manager at Ahold Delhaize. And I'm co-chair of the LEAD Network Netherlands chapter. Before we start, a quick thank you to Marga, who did all of the tech stuff behind the scenes, the Netherlands chapter committee, and of course, Neuro Leadership Institute. And a special thanks to David Roque for co-hosting this webinar. Next slide, please. Yes. Furthermore, we need to discuss a bit of the technology side. So please make sure your audio is activated. You can do this through your computer or dial in. You're all in the listen-only mode. Interacting can you do with the Q&A button below, and there you can submit your questions. It's important that you only use the Q&A button for specific questions, and for feedback, comments, and things like that, you can use the chat. We are also going to record this session for our other members. Furthermore, I would like you all to get some pen and paper because David will ask you to draw or write things down. So that's about the technicalities. Then a little bit about the antitrust. As many of you know, we work sometimes for competing companies, and this is a standard statement which we need to show every time we connect with each other. But just as a reminder, please don't violate any of the antitrust laws, and make sure we keep our conversations and questions about the topic of today. Then, in terms of LEAD Network, a quick introduction. Our mission at LEAD Network is to attract, retain, and advance women in the consumer goods industry and in the retail sector through Europe. And we do that through education, leadership, and business development. The LEAD Network is a non-profit, volunteer-led organization that is by the members and for the members. Today's session is hosted by Aldo Hess in cooperation with the Neuro Leadership Institute. Then a little bit about the Netherlands chapter. We have more than 1,000 members, and every event our members, our number of members is growing. So I therefore like to especially welcome our new members. We have members from all different organizations in different functions, and we really would like to involve also more retailers and male into our conversation about diversity and inclusion. So please bring your male colleagues to our next event. We are planning to arrange the event in September. But for today, we invite David Rook, CEO and co-founder of the Neuro Leadership Institute. And David coined the term Neuro Leadership. He's a business best-selling author, leader, and director of the Neuro Leadership Institute. Neuro Leadership Institute is a global initiative bringing neuroscientists and executives together to build a new science for leadership development and assisting large organizations in operationalizing neuroscience research to develop better leaders and managers. Today, David will share relevant data and science-backed ways to stay engaged and build a better normal. Extremely relevant, especially now society is slowly getting going again. So David, welcome, and the floor is yours.
Thanks very much, Anna. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Excellent. Thank you very much, and thanks very much to the 90 or so people who are joining us today. Firstly, my background, I'm originally Australian, that's my accent, European parents, live in North America, normally in New York City, right downtown, but I'm currently in the woods a few hours out of the city, and for the last 3 months I've been in the woods, in the forest, doing a lot of hiking, walking, and like all of you, working harder than I ever have as well. But I head up the Neuro Leadership Institute. We are we're quite unusual. Our vision is making organizations more human through science. And it's interesting. We've been asking thousands of leaders in the last few months kind of what they want to focus on, what they want to keep out of this crisis. And it's interesting that one of the common themes is they want the humanity to come through. They want in a year or 2 years or 3 years, more flexibility, more humanity, more of the empathy, more caring in our organizations, as well as driving performance. But our vision is making organizations more human, but doing that through science. And we have a team of about 200 full-time people. We are 22 years old, on the ground in 24 countries. And we do original research. We've published over 60 peer-reviewed academic research papers on a specific area. We do original research on the biological basis of leadership, of learning, culture, and change, and how organizations can be more science-based in their whole people, in all their people practices. So that's what we do. I'm going to draw on recent research and original research we've done over a long time. We also help organizations then use that research. And we're now up to 50 of the Fortune 100 that we've been advising. So we've been working with 50 of the Fortune 100 companies in the world. So firms like Microsoft use us extensively, a lot of technology, a lot of retail, consumer goods, pharmaceuticals, many, many others. But at the core of our work is research, and the research is in the service of better practices. That's what we're going to talk about. And in particular, in about February this year, we started being requested by our clients. Our clients started calling us and saying, our people can't focus. What do we do? People are obviously in March and April and May, organizations everywhere have really been struggling with this, and humans everywhere have been really struggling with this crisis. And secondly, the human rights crisis that's now here as well. And we've been working, and we put our team very quickly onto going back to work we've done in the last 10 years and finding key insights to focus on to make things better. And so what I'm going to show you is some of our most important research to help you build actually a better normal rather than a new normal. And that's the title of a topic we wrote about. It's the title of a piece we wrote about in Forbes. You can see a sort of a screenshot there, the framework all leaders need to build a better normal. And so one of the things that's been difficult about this is there's sort of short-term, mid-term, and long-term that we all have to think about all at once. I'm going to share with you some insights for just how do you stay okay day-to-day? How do you kind of manage yourself as a leader at the next level? I'm going to give you some language to understand what's been going on in your brain and kind of wrestle that a bit. I'm also going to then give you some language for how do you help others be more sustainable. And then also we're going to talk about leverage the moment, which is more long-term. And in particular, we'll focus on the human rights crisis that we have and what we can do to truly address systemic change in that issue in our organizations. So a lot to cover. I'm going to go fairly quickly. Definitely have pen and paper, and my team will put in the chat different resources as we go, you know, try and grab those. So I think someone from my team's just put in the article. If you click on that, you can kind of grab that, read it later, that kind of thing. So so definitely going to speak about, and I'll also be checking the chat. So feel free to put any kind of comments in the chat anytime. Someone's asking about where does the Black Lives Matter debate live. I'm going to be sharing kind of about a third of the session. We'll dig into our perspective and point of view on how to be part of the solution there as an organization. So we'll definitely dig into that. So let's jump in. I'm going to start off with kind of how do we look after ourselves? How do we look after each other so that people can be sustainable? And then how do we drive systemic change on race and equity and all of that? And all of this from very much a science point of view. Okay, let's jump in. So first of all, how do we take care of ourselves? This is a particular crisis, obviously a once in 100 year event so far, but it's a crisis that does something very particular to your brain that most people, if you haven't lived through, you know, terrible tragedy and war, most people have not had to deal with this kind of issue in their brain. And essentially what's happening right now is you're dealing with a greater amount of threat, of danger, than you've had before. The brain classifies everything as opportunity or reward, you can see on the right, or danger or threat, you can see on the left there on screen. To get the most from this session, I would encourage you to make a drawing of this, just a simple arrow, if you like, a horizontal arrow at either end, just an arrowhead. And on the right, put toward reward, on the left, put away from threat. So this concept of you have more rewards, stay away from threats. This is the organizing principle of all of the whole brain at every level of scale. It's also the organizing principle of relationships, of teams, of organizations, of countries, of planets. We're always in a towards state or away state. Right now, the whole planet is in a bit of an away state. There's a shrinking, there's a something kind of we're all pulling away in many ways. Now, the threat state is adaptive. It's how we, you know, it's how we stay alive. It's there to keep us alive. Generally, it's stronger than the reward state. What's happening at the moment is we've been kicking into a stronger level of threat than we normally experience. And it's kicking us up to higher levels than many of us have the experience to manage. Now, partially what helps is having language. So I'm going to give you some language now for types of threat. And it turns out there are three different intensities of threat with different qualities. It's really helpful to know which one you're in at any time. So if you've done a drawing, level one is just to the left of the middle. So you've got a middle mark, horizontal line. Just to the left is a zone, which scientists think of as manageable threat. Now, this is actually basically your brain saying, oh, there's some kind of danger, but it'll be fine. But you should be alert just in case. That's basically what happens. You're walking in the woods and you hear a bear way off in the distance. You're like, okay, better pay attention, but it's okay. It was a long way away. What happens in your brain is you're actually more awake, more alert. And as it turns out, more productive and focused as long as the tasks are not creative, right? So if it's a creative task, you need a calm, open mind, a more positive mind, more toward state. But generally, any tasks that involve kind of execution, focus, close focus, you'll be more effective at a level one threat. And in the workplace, we use level one threat a lot on ourselves and on others to try to kind of get people to focus and do things. It's not maladaptive. It's pretty good. It's the eustress you've heard of, like slight stress, but it feels manageable. That's eustress, level one. The problem is level two. So level two threat is a whole zone kind of in the middle of that left side. Level two threat is your brain saying, oh, there's a real danger that really could hurt you. It's not here right now, but you better get ready. So this is the bear kind of suddenly over the hill. You know, you can hear a bear over the hill suddenly. I actually had this. I'm in the woods right now. And I had an experience in the last few days of thinking I heard a bear just over a hill. And you really do spike. The heart rate really spikes up. And your brain goes into high alert and quite high alarm, but not all the way, but quite high alert and high alarm. Essentially, everything that you would normally do at work is degraded. In other words, all the kinds of work you would be good at, you're much worse at now because you're making cognitive errors, mistakes. You know, you're making perceptual errors, cognitive errors. So you mishear things, missee things. You make mistakes in math, mistakes in scheduling. You can't do any deep thinking, but you can respond and react, right? So level one, you can do everything except creative work. Level two, you can only really be reactive. There's no deep thinking. You can't build a plan of that kind of thing. Level three, you can't even open your computer, or if you can, you can maybe delete emails. That's it. And level three is the bear running at you. Level three is the really intense threat response. There's really no good thinking there. Now, the trouble with this crisis is there are three things that normally create threats. And normally when the first one happens, we go to the second one to balance or the third one. And all of them are causing this very strong threat response. In Europe, certainly it's being wrestled down. In North America, it feels like we have a long, long way to go. But in Europe, certainly this is being improved in some places, less others. But what's happening is your brain craves, actually, before we go into that, just put in the chat, would you put in the chat your threat number today? And you can have 0.25, 0.5. You can also have zeros. So neutral or positive, just put zero. So no threat. If you're neutral today or feeling positive, optimistic, calm, put a zero. You can have a 0.5, 0.25. But what's your threat level today? Let's just get in the chat what that is. Oops. I'll have a look at that. Oh, we've got some zeros. Lovely. I feel calmer already knowing there's some zeros here. Some 1.5, some 1.3s. Okay, I'm going to take it from this that you're all quite senior folks in your organizations. Oh, there's someone with a three. If you were all frontline employees, we would see ones and twos and threes. And this is some data we've got from over 1,000 people that the frontline employees generally are suffering a lot more from this than top employees. And it's partly the resources they have, the physical space, the sense of certainty, the choices, all this kind of thing. Thanks very much for putting that in. All right. So what we want to do with this is we want to be able to recognize in ourselves and others kind of the threat level we're in. But even more importantly, we want to take steps ahead of time to stay neutral or one. To stay in a positive state where there's no threat or at a level one threat, because that's adaptive. And if you're a leader, as most of you are, if you lead a team or a family or both, people automatically take on your emotions and it's additive. If they're slightly stressed and you're slightly stressed, they become quite stressed. Okay. If they're at a 0.5, you're at a 0.5, they become at a one. The math isn't perfect, but that's how it works. We, especially as the leader, our stress becomes other people's stress. So as a leader of a family, of an organization of a team, we want to really be at 0-1. Now, the time to do that is before the threat happens. We need to basically put in place what we call buffers. And a buffer is something that stops the threat coming at you. So you've got a threat coming at you in the form of uncertainty. You want to buffer yourself against that sense of uncertainty. So there are three things in particular that the brain really craves as resources. When these resources are low, it's a strong threat. When they're higher, it's a reward. So like food, food is a resource. When we have lots of food, we see lots of food, we get a reward response. When we're hungry, we get a threat response, right? In a similar way, certainty is a resource that when we get more certainty, we feel better. When we get less certainty, we feel quite bad. And remember, bad is stronger than good, right? The negative is quite a bit stronger than the positive. So a little bit of certainty is quite positive, but a little bit of uncertainty is much more negative. So in particular, certainty is something that we've got to wrestle with. The second one is a feeling of control or autonomy. So we're like feeling like we have some control in the situation. That's again, a resource that's been really challenging this time. And the third one is a sense of relatedness or connection with others. So normally in life, when things are uncertain, we try to work out what we can control. That's been hard. And when we can't find a sense of control, we'll connect with others and get related. That's also been hard. So there are three things that are kind of, you know, really challenging us. And that's where we need to put in these buffers. So let's dig in. I'm going to show you kind of the best buffers across certainty, autonomy, and relatedness, and see if you can pick one out of the six that kind of really calls to you. So with certainty, and then I'll pause and take questions in about 3 or 4 minutes. So certainty, your brain is craving more certainty. The first thing we do is we go to the media, we go to the news, we go to our phones, we look at what's happening. We think that will make us feel better. Actually, it's making us feel a lot worse. So one thing to increase certainty is regulate your media intake. The second thing is, and this is a strange one, but your brain has a distance bias where things closer to you feel more important. So the whole world could be going crazy, but if your home and your environment feels very organized, you actually feel a lot better. So there's a distance bias you can kind of hack a bit, where make sure that things around you are very organized, very structured, very certain. And in particular, if it's unexpected to do that, if that's not your normal way, it will give you an even bigger reward response. So do things that create order, ideally things that have second order effects, like organizing your, you know, diet or fridge or office or your office if you're back at work, organizing your office there. Anything that creates order will help with a sense of certainty, especially if it's local. All right, second one, autonomy. Identify what you can personally control. So usually when we feel out of control, it's a strong threat. What you can do with autonomy personally is literally make a list of all the things you now control around you. And secondly, if you can control your sleep, your water, your exercise, you'll get these second order effects as well. So get really organized and really structured around these things. And particularly exercise, you know, when stress is high every day, a little bit of exercise to release the adrenaline is very, very helpful. All right. And then finally, relatedness. So relatedness is a sense of safe connections. We want to, when we're feeling disconnected from others, plan daily connections where we build those relationships. Many times by phone, many times on Zoom, that's fine. If you can hear and see people clearly, it gets many, many good benefits. But plan those connections where they're very much part of your life. And the best one is helping others in this time. The more you actually help others, the more your stress has come down. So this is about you. I'm going to get to kind of them in a minute, but just pick one of these and put it in the chat. And also, if you have a question about what I've covered so far, you can put that in the Q&A and I'll see that come up. But put one of these six in the chat right now. What's something that you think could be interesting to work on for a week? And I'll go over them again just quickly so you can see them. Certainty, it's putting in a buffer against the negative, or putting in a positive buffer, create positive. With autonomy, work out what you can control, really control and manage your sleep, your diet, or with relatedness, these ones. Just put in the chat, if you're willing, what you'd like to work on. Fantastic. And then any questions you can throw in the Q&A before we go to chapter two. But this is about, I mean, the research on managing emotions and managing your threat state is that when a threat kicks in, you don't have a lot of cognitive resources to manage it. The threat response literally increases oxygen and glucose into the limbic system and out of the network you need for managing the threat response. So we need to put in place buffers so we're reducing the chance of threats happening and we're overall in a more positive state when it comes along. That's the best way to actually regulate our emotions, is ahead of time so that the stronger emotions don't come on. If we do have a strong level two or a level three, we need a biological response. We need a good meal, a walk, a workout, a nap perhaps, sit quietly, do something calming. But if you get a strong level two or three, you're really feeling fragmented, feeling just, mentally overwhelmed, then you often need a biological thing, like something calming physically to actually do, or a sleep or a meal or a nap or something like that. But ideally, staying cool under pressure involves planning ahead. That's what we need to do. All right, let's go to chapter two. How do we look after each other? And this will also start to kind of give you some insight to what's happening in the human rights crisis, but we'll dig into that separately. What's going on in all of our brains right now are really five things that are causing threat. And I've shown you three: certainty, autonomy, relatedness. Okay. It'd be good to write those down: certainty, autonomy, relatedness. I'm going to give you two more, and they form one word. You'll see that as it kind of comes together. And this word describes five situations that are driving our reactions at the moment. Now, as a leader, whether you lead a family, a team, or organization, you can have a big role to play in other people's threat state in what you do. And that's what I want to walk you through now. I want to walk you through the most powerful things you can do to help others reduce their threat state. Because I can tell you, a brain that's in a high threat state, everything else you do doesn't work. It's the first thing that you've got to actually manage. It's like a car with no petrol. There's no point tuning the car if there's no petrol. If there's no gas, you've got to put the gas in so that you can actually go somewhere. And if you're at high threat, you're just not going anywhere. So this is the thing to really work on first. All right. So the five issues I'm mentioning, are status, certainty, autonomy, relatedness, fairness. You can see the CAR that I covered before in the middle, right? So as a leader, you can have a big role in creating positive SCARF, right? SCARF is the word describing all five. You can create positive SCARF, and as you do that, people will be able to think again, right? It'll put fuel or oxygen into their system. And it literally is oxygen, by the way. A threat response literally pulls away the oxygen you need for the executive functioning, which is the seat of all like intentional conscious processing. All right, let's have a look at firstly, status. What can you do to send positive status signals? So a big one is actually celebrating the positives. Celebrate the daily progress and wins. There's a lot of negative. There's a lot of people trying completely new things and struggling. People building completely new pathways. We have to, as leaders, actually be celebrating and championing people and supporting people and celebrating those daily progress. The second thing is people are making a lot of mistakes and errors and they're challenged. And as leaders, every time we tell someone what to do or what they've done wrong, we raise our status and we drop theirs. But people's status is already down. That's not a positive thing. Whereas when we ask someone what they think they should do next time, we raise their status. When we ask people's opinions, we raise their status. When we ask people's input, we raise their status. So people who are, having their status challenged, and it's no fault of their own, what we want to do as leaders is raise their status, asking them more questions, getting more input, letting our team run the meeting, alternating around the group, for example, really getting more input from that. And also, as a leader, dropping our own status a bit. And trying to raise others, maybe dropping our own status, showing that we're in this together, which we'll come to that, back to that in a minute. But as I go through these again, see if you can pick one. I'm going to give you 10 to choose from. See if you can pick one that would be the most powerful for you. Now, certainty is interesting. You can't increase absolute certainty, but you can increase clarity. What does that mean? you increase clarity when you tell people the stages that you're going through, right? Where, you know, we're at this stage of the crisis. We had the shock stage. Now we're in kind of this in-between stage. You know, as you discuss stages that you're going through, you increase clarity. As you discuss principles, you increase clarity. Here are the principles we're working with for scheduling. Here are the principles of running meetings. So the more you lay out kind of principles and timing and process, the more people actually calm down. And you can't increase real certainty, but you can increase people's understanding of the rules and the principles, all of that. Now, the other thing is, you know, people are very frazzled. While you want to communicate often, you have to provide lots of context. So every communication should start with why you're speaking, what the goal is, what the plan is, where you're coming from, you know, before you just jump straight to a problem. So our brains are all very problem focused, but as leaders, we want to lift up and say, look, we're at this meeting because we want to, you know, we want to build a better normal. And we want to, you know, we've been working on it for 3 months, and this is what we've done so far, and this is where we are now, and this is where we're going. So lots of context will help the frazzled brain. Okay, so these are two things we can help with to bring people back from that strong threat response. Now, third one, similar to autonomy before, help others identify what they can control is a big one. So how, you know, what can you control as an individual contributor? You know, with our kids, with our team members, help them see what they can control now. Now, as a team leader, you can help people prioritize every week. That's tremendously helpful for control. Help people see what really, really matters. And literally every week you raise autonomy then. Now, a really big one, and I'll explain this one a bit more, is unexpected autonomy when you can. Now, let me slow down and explain this. So unexpected rewards are much stronger than expected rewards. In other words, if you, you know, if you're expecting to receive a meal and you get the meal, not very rewarding. If you're not expecting to receive a meal and someone hands you a whole meal, it's much more exciting than if you're expecting, you know, a meal. Someone just gives you a whole meal. So, you know, even the simplest thing like a meal, if it's unexpected, is quite rewarding. So what we want to do is hack that system and give people unexpected control, right? A control that they never thought they would have in the workplace. Now, what this looks like, I'll give you, there's infinite ways. I'll give you some examples of what this looks like. Very simple, an organization might say, look, this group of people, the finance team, for example, it's completely optional if you come back to the office or not for as long as you want. You can come in a day a week, 2 days a week, any days, however you want, you can completely decide. Now, if that's unexpected and new, that can be very rewarding for people, right? Or another example, an organization can say, look, you need 50% of your team online during business hours. But the team can work out how to manage that, right? And then within the team, you then juggle who has kids at home, who doesn't, how do you do that? You know, how do you organize that? Or another example, a team can say, how many synchronous hours do we need? Synchronous meaning all on at the same time. Now, if you say, all right, we need 20 hours a week that we're all online at the same time for meetings and conversations, but 20 hours where we're not. And so maybe which 20 hours? Could they be Monday to Thursday? Right? Do they have to be, you know, do they have to start at 9 a.m.? Could they be different? Could we alternate them between weeks to manage different schedules, right? So let's say you have 20 hours of synchronous time, of time together, then tell people to work any other time of the week they want, the weekends, the evenings, the middle of the night, the morning, whatever works for people, right? So make sure you're online at that time, but manage your life otherwise. So those are three examples. What's common to all of them is you're giving people back control of their time and their work. And this turns out to be one of the most powerful things and probably in the top three organizational practices that's really helping now. This one in particular is really, really helping. And then let's go further. So again, think of, you know, which one of these, and I'll go over them again, but think of which one of these, you know, you might work on. Relatedness, a big one. So you have to, as a leader, start with empathy. You have to start with empathy for what people are going through, right? Now, this was before the human rights movement that's in crisis that has started. Even before that, we needed really deep empathy for what people were experiencing, now even more so. what happens when we feel empathy, when we feel like someone like hears us, we calm down. And maybe not fully, but it brings us back up to maybe a level two or a level one. It's really, really powerful as a calming mechanism, feeling like people hear you, feeling validated in that way. So as leaders, we need to make sure people feel heard and regularly check in. Like, how are you doing? What's happening for you at home? Really, really important one. That one's probably in the top three organizational practices as well, is people feeling like their company is really listening to them, feeling like their company has their back, that, you know, is supporting them. The other one is coming back to shared goals. Now, when you have people that have a shared goal, everyone can actually take more pain. Literally everyone has a reduced threat response. And it puts everyone on the same team mentally in such a way that we share information better, we support each other better, and we literally feel more optimistic. So as a team leader, we want to continuously come back to what are we working on, what are we working on, what are we working on? And not quarterly, not even monthly, but weekly. What are we trying to do this week? What's the big thing this week? Maybe monthly, what's the big thing this month we're all working on? Really important. And then finally, fairness. So people are having strong variation in this, you know, in this crisis. If they're people of color, they're experiencing, you know, very big challenges cognitively, maybe some, you know, many, maybe some not, but there's big individual variation. You have folks with all sorts of issues at home, at work, etc. So we need to accept that and kind of manage with that and help people support each other. And the other thing is providing extraordinary support for those who are, you know, having who feel like they're still risking their life. If they're out in public a lot more, then there is a perception that they are, you know, risking their life more. So we want to provide extraordinary support for those or people who are really struggling right now for whatever reason. As the organization, you know, wants to provide, you know, over and above support for those people to really balance that sense of fairness. So there are five. I'll go through, see if you can pick one, and then we'll pause and we'll take your questions as well. But pick one of these that you think really calls to you and put it in the chat. So with status, daily progress, or asking rather than telling. For certainty, it's clarity, like really creating clarity about process and principles. Communicating with lots and lots of context. Autonomy, helping others identify what they really can control now, very powerful. Or providing unexpected autonomy, really letting people have much more control. Relatedness, deep empathy, really letting people know you care, or bringing people together on shared goals. Or with fairness, really accepting that strong individual variation or extraordinary support. So let's put things in the chat there. What's coming up for you? Also you can start to put questions in. Honest empathy, extraordinary support, deep empathy, see lots of empathy, particularly the, you know, the human rights movement that's happening. We need to definitely have some really, really big empathy right now. Or as I would say, or we've been saying in NLI, you've got to listen deeply is the first step. Really, really listen deeply. Can't pick one, all are so important. Pick one at a time. Whoever SV is, they all are so important, but pick one at a time and work on that for a week. And then the next week, work on another one. The next week, work on another one. Really, really important to try to do like one thing really well for a good week. Fantastic. So the framework is SCARF. The framework is SCARF, S-C-A-R-F. It's a really powerful tool for seeing what's going on in a team and working out what to do instead. SCARF is incredibly helpful for managing yourself, for taking care of yourself, as well as supporting others, as well as thinking about the organization. It's something that that really sticks in people's minds and really helps people to do things differently. All right, let's go to some questions. I see some questions coming in. We can pause, take some questions for a few minutes before we get to chapter three. All right. Let's see some questions. So with unexpected autonomy, this is going to become the new normal. How do you manage it? Yeah, it's interesting. There's like a sense of uncertainty for HR leaders right now. I know many of you are HR leaders because you're used to kind of having rules and, you know, organized structures. And now there has to be an incredible amount of autonomy. You are going to have obviously a situation of, you know, more people wanting to work from home than ever. And there's going to be, you know, people that you can let do that and not let do that. It's going to be really, really chaos. The thing that's going to help you right now is principles. So I was talking to my team about this, for example, and we were like, oh, the coming back to work thing, it's, you know, I don't know, people will work it out. And then I sat down and said, no, actually, people need principles. We were talking about masks in the office, and there was a, you know, I said, well, we need a principle. You know, if you're sitting quietly, not moving around, and, you know, nowhere near other people, and in no common areas, then you cannot wear a mask. Otherwise, you always have a mask on. That's a principle. You know, always a mask on, unless you're, you know, really on your own. I guess that sounds like a rule, but we need a lot of principles around this. So, for example, you know, teams get to have a final say, but they should check in with their, you know, with one up, for example. That can be a principle. You know, check in with the leader above that team just to be careful. So you're going to need to establish principles, and you're going to need to really communicate much more often than you're used to. You're going to need to have a lot more communication than you're used to with individual, you know, teams, with employees. A principle, you know, some of the principles we're hearing have to be by kind of job title. So a set of principles for finance will be different to customer service, will be different to manufacturing staff. So you've got to think about principles for different kind of jobs as well, rather than for the whole company. So, you know, for finance, maybe you're fine for them to work anywhere and they can work as synchronously as they need, right? For customer service, you're going to need a principle like, you know, you need X percent in the office at some time, and you need, you know, Y percent available at any time. So the principles, you sort of got to think about at the job type, and then you'll be able to establish those. And the other thing is make sure you get lots of input on those principles, like develop a draft of those inputs, of those principles, get lots and lots of feedback as well. Okay. It's a good question just come in from Ingeborg. So is trust an important element? So you need to be able to trust and trust teams to act in the best interest. So yeah, it's really interesting. You know, there's a lot of companies that were in a control, you know, kind of, you know, their modus operandi, their theory was, you know, people need to be controlled. There's theory X, theory Y. People need to be controlled or people need to be supported. And the thing I can tell you about work from home, from all the research on this, people are more productive, period. Now, that's an average. So if you have 100 people, some people will be less productive. Some people will be very much more productive. Some people in the middle. On average, people are more productive. Do you want to know how much? A day a week. So when you let people work from home, on average, they're a day a week more productive, right? Which is amazing. By the way, when you make people work in an open plan, they lose a day a week of productivity. So everyone has this backwards. We think, oh, open plan where everyone can see each other is the best. No, it's actually the worst for productivity. The best productivity is actually working from home. Now, of course, there's a feeling of, do we know what people are doing and what's really going on? Now, rather than asking for a full report from every person every day, what they've done, what you want to do instead is use positive social pressure and run what's called a stand-up meeting regularly. Now, once a week at least, maybe twice a week if you need to, probably, you know, no more than maybe three times a week. But a stand-up meeting is very short. It's about 15 minutes, maybe more for a bigger team. And it's basically, how did you win and what do you need help with? Now, no one wants to be the person in that meeting that says, I didn't win at all the last few days. Everyone wants to win, right? Everyone wants to show to their peers that they're making progress on things. And then as a manager, you can really see people who are making progress, people who can't. So in a stand-up meeting, how have you, you know, tell us about your wins, not everything you did, but the things that you like really are proud of. Tell us about your wins and tell us what you need help with. You got a couple of minutes each person. As you go around a group of 3, 6, 10 people, no more than about 8 to 10, you really see regularly what's going on and you can support people. So rather than a control culture, it's a supporting culture, assuming people are doing the best. Now, if you think that it's a terrible idea to assume people will do the best, then you haven't seen how much money eBay makes. Because eBay and many other social things and Airbnb and many other things assume that the majority of people do the right thing. And that turns out to be true. The majority of people do the right thing, and even more do that when you give them trust. there's always going to be some bad apples. And if you build a system to manage the bad apples, you actually build a bad system. You build a system that distrusts everyone. So we want to create systems that actually speak of trust, and then give people the opportunity to do that. Okay. Trust begets trust. Absolutely. That's definitely something that happens. All right. So if there's any other questions coming in, someone's asking about the research on working from home versus open plan. One of my team can put a couple of our blogs in that we wrote early on in the crisis about working from home. So we wrote a couple of posts in Forbes, one about kind of why it's a good thing overall. And then the other one is kind of the five things to keep in mind to make virtual meetings better. So we can put some of those, and those have references and links into this whole topic. All right. Let's get to chapter three. Just looking at the time. Yeah. Let's get to chapter three and get a little more into the tougher conversation of, you know, what's going on now. We've been in this space of diversity and inclusion. Let's call it diversity, equity and inclusion, however we want to call it. We've been in this space for about 7 years. We've been studying the science of this space. We've published 8 original research papers that take apart current approaches in this space and come up with a better way. And I want to say that that if you want to, you know, as an organization, you want to have the biggest impact, then fix your organization is the first thing to do, is get your organization to a place where there is diversity and inclusion, equity, belonging, all of that. You know, start there, and everyone starts there within what you can control, and you can start to have a big impact. So should organizations be investing outside? Yes. Should they be doing really bold things? Absolutely. But I think a really, really important thing is to get the organization right. We did publish something, and maybe Aaron can put this in the chat. We did publish something about kind of what leaders need to do now. It's listen deeply, unite widely, act boldly. Listen deeply, which is relatedness. Unite widely, which is relatedness. Act boldly, which is, you know, really do something powerful, do something important. So yes, absolutely, it's a time, particularly for leaders, you know, senior leaders, CEOs, others, to listen deeply, unite widely, act boldly. But I think one of the really important things to act boldly about is get your organization right, and follow the science, right? Follow the science. So let me dig a little bit into the science. This is what we're seeing around diversity and inclusion in organizations. We're seeing, you know, leadership commitment, investing internally, externally, public statements, you know, getting a chief diversity officer, all these kinds of things. The trouble is these are, you know, good priorities, but they're just priorities, and priorities are just the beginning. To create systemic change, we actually need to work on the habits that people, that really, really change folks. We need to work on the habits that have an impact, and then we need systems that support that. Give you an example. You want an individual to stop smoking. Getting them to prioritize it is one thing. Not much will change until they start wearing a patch daily, which is a habit, and change their friends to non-smokers, which is a system, right? But if you can get someone to care about stop smoking and start to wear a patch and change their friends to all non-smokers, now you'll get change, right? So the habits that people apply day to day are really critical. And then the systems that support and encourage those habits are really important. So this is how we think about change at NLI. We're in the culture change business, and diversity inclusion is one of our 3 big practices. The others, one is leadership overall, and the other is performance. So we have 3 practices at NLI, but all of them are based on PHS, priorities, habits, and systems. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about our research on the diversity inclusion side. We think that there are 3 critical habits for real change in organizations. And the first one is most people attacking bias actively every week. Most people actively addressing bias, actually doing something differently every week. And now the reason we know that is we've done all this research that people have biases every week that have an impact, at least 1 to 3 times. Nearly everyone, when you teach bias properly, actually starts to see things every week and do something differently. Sometimes big things, sometimes small. I'll show you some data on that. Secondly, most people actively including others every week. And thirdly, people speaking out productively when this doesn't happen. Those are the three critical habits. Can you learn those all at once? No. Can you introduce these into a company kind of one at a time and really slowly build these? Absolutely. And I'll show you some data. So if you're interested in this, we can follow on later. If you just can kind of give you some more resources, I'll give you a way to do that in a minute. But I'll just give you a sort of high level, some of our data, some of our insight on this. Let me just go to this firstly. So this is a study we did. We taught people how to label bias in a really simple way. This is 9,500 people, by the way, from 30 organizations. So we taught over 9,500 people how to label bias and do something differently. But we did it in a very different way than what you've seen out there in the market. It's a very, very different way. We then went back about a month later, a month or more, and said, how many of you deliberately did something in the last week to mitigate bias? And we see 78%. And we see this data over and over and over that most people, most weeks, are actually now doing something about it. Now, this is important. And what they're doing, by the way, that's really important is they need to be putting in place systems that reduce the chance of bias. So systems that really drop it down. And I'll give you an example of this. I've got one here. I'll give you an example of a system. A manager recognized he was outgoing and liked to talk. He was always hiring people like himself. On considering similarity bias, he asked peers to interview candidates in his behalf. He knew if he was clear with the role description, they would hire great people and mitigate his own bias. So this is someone who's really bought in to bias being real. We just teach five categories of bias based on how the brain works. It's called the SEEDS model. So we teach five categories so people can remember this, they can apply it, they can start to see this much, much better. We then teach people how to mitigate in the moment, how to plan ahead, or how to prevent at the source. Right? So very, very simple. It's a really different approach. It's one simple model and then three ways of mitigating that get to the systems. Now, here's the cliff note. If you have 10,000 employees, you should have 500,000 acts of bias mitigation a year across all types of mitigation. This is how systemic change will happen. So when we study companies, we see, and it's crazy, we see every single employee sees biases that they can do something about most weeks, and often quite a few times. And so this is the number it ratchets up to. So this is how we address systemic bias with systemic bias mitigation. But systemic bias mitigation that gets to the source of the issue and takes the problem out right from the source. So this is not everything. This isn't going to solve everything. But over time, this will actually get to the source of the issue in our organizations versus just addressing the, I guess what you'd call the symptoms. So I'm not going to go sort of all, I just want to give you one shout out. I'm not going to go too far into all of this, but I just want to give you one shout out. Don't do mandatory bias training. Don't do mandatory allyship training. Don't do mandatory anything diversity training. Really good research, and this is the piece that that summarizes it. Really good research that anything in the diversity inclusion space that's mandatory, you've got a reasonable chance of it backfiring if it's mandatory. And if it's not mandatory, if people feel like they're opting in, they're choosing, you actually get a whole different experience. It's a really, really important thing. All right, let me just finish that section and say, mitigating bias is one thing. A separate set of behaviors is actively including. You can start with either one, but actively including people each week is going to be really important. All right, let me pause there, I think. Let's go to questions. Let's go to questions because we've got a few minutes left. And also comments in the chat. What's coming up for you? What are some of the insights you're having? Let's see some comments in the chat and some questions so that I know kind of where you'd like to go from here. Some questions, some comments in the chat. Let's see what's coming in. What's coming up for you as we think about this moment? And I'm going to, actually, I'll show you just as you think about that, I'll just show you some data we collected on inclusion. It is actually possible to make people more inclusive. This is the percentage of people who notice their manager now being more inclusive in the last week. This is a study of over 600 people. This is people whose manager went through some kind of learning experience. It is possible, if you get inclusion right, to actually make managers more inclusive. The key is to follow the science and do things one habit at a time. You've really got to do things one habit at a time. Let me, and I think I want to go back to PHS to just kind of close this off. Priorities, habit systems. It's such an interesting, it's such an important slide. This is I'm going to show you some data. When you think about habits properly, when you really think about habits, you can do the most incredible things. We helped Hewlett-Packard, I'll just show you some data. We helped Hewlett-Packard build a new set of priorities. These are the priorities. We did this a couple of years ago. We helped them build a set of priorities. We then helped them work out the critical habits in these. How do you actually build these habits across everyone, across 50,000 people? We then built a strategy that involved people managers walking their teams, within their teams, through content over a month. So people managers doing this virtually, mostly doing this virtually, with their teams walking through content for a month. Here's what we found. When we then went back, if people's boss had done this, this is what the employees said. Now, this was literally this was no workshop. There was no workshop. There was no like training. This was giving people managers content to build habits, one habit at a time for a month. If your people manager, if your manager went through this experience, then you can see the data that actually happened. If your manager hadn't yet taken you through this experience, that's the first data point. So just have a look at that. That's incredible, right? But all this was following the science around habit activation. So does your team encourage new thinking? 60% if they hadn't gone through, 80% if they had. Does your manager make everyone feel valued? 52%. Versus 96%, right? We want people to feel valued. We want people to feel included. All they needed in this instance was four conversations, short conversations, but spread over 4 weeks, focus on the critical habits, and then focus on everyone building them at once. So I just want to challenge you in a closing comment. I want to challenge you when you're thinking about learning and change right now, as you think about learning and change, you can dramatically, dramatically increase the impact of everything you're doing because things are virtual now, right? We're at a fork in the road with virtual learning. Because things are virtual, you can actually make things much worse or dramatically better. And I really challenge you to think about how, you know, what the science says to make this dramatically, dramatically better. Please reach out to me if you're interested, and I'll give you a couple of topics you can follow up on, but please reach out to me. I'll put my, my email in the chat. Please reach out if you're interested in more on the diversity and inclusion side. We've got we can share with you lots of webinars and papers and research, and you know, you can talk to some of our team. But if you're interested in the diversity and inclusion side, reach out. If you're interested, we're also doing what we call a learning audit, and a learning audit is basically a free hour with me or my team, with your learning team, and we just literally walk through what you should be doing now based on the science. So we're doing a free learning audit right now. So you can reach out to me about that. Also, just look at our website, neuroleadership.com. You'll see a ton in there. Every week, we have a series of events you're probably going to be interested in. We have insider events, small groups of people talking about specific topics, multiples of those every week. A big event. We have a big event every single week with different organizations. So we're coming up to the end. Just thanks very much, everyone, for being here. Lots and lots to cover. Research can really help us right now. If you follow the science around change, it's possible to do very, very different things. Follow the science around change, and you're going to find it's possible to actually leverage the moment in ways that that you just kind of almost can't imagine. So back to Anna, back to you for some closing comments.
Yes, David, thank you so much. It was a really interesting session, I think. And I saw that Natalie, she said, so interesting, 1 hour is too short. And I completely agree with her. So really appreciate that you put your email address in the chat and offered us some solutions. And Marga already said maybe we can ask him back. So. Maybe we come back with you and your team for another session. For now, I would like to ask everyone to stay connected during the Lead Network membership platforms, because we think it's really important to stay connected between the events as well. You can follow other members, find our latest news, things like that. And at last, yes, I would like to thank you all for joining the webinar. Thanks, Marga. Thanks, David, and the whole Neural Leadership Institute team that helped putting everything together. Please take a moment to share your feedback and follow our website for further events. That's it. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Take care of yourselves, everyone. Please feel free to drop me a note with any feedback or questions. We'll share some research. Thanks so much, everyone. Take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.